Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle, clones. What's cracking? Wednesday in the books, and we kept this thing rolling. Another big show. The Dodgers finally get over. They get a win. The Indians rip win number 20, and I got around to breaking down Tony Romo's amazing debut on CBS in the broadcast booth. We also had a couple of great gets. Detroit Lions running back Amir Abdullah absolutely brought it. He's got a ton of it, as does Vanderbilt head football coach Derek Mason. A ton of show, Alvy. So let's go ahead and get this thing rolling right now. Going into last night's game, they were in a bad, bad way. An 11-game losing streak. They had their ace on the mound. They're going up against the Giants. Had to have it. Had to have it. In fact, the words of the manager, Dave Roberts, quote, "We needed it." That's what he said after they outlasted San Francisco 5-3 to end that 11-game losing streak. And honestly, no truer words have ever been spoken. I'm not sure who needed that more, Dodger players or Dodger fans. In fact, I'm going to go with the fans, because on some level, the players have to believe they're going to turn it around. The fans, on the other hand, seem to have lost the faith a couple of weeks back. Forget winning a World Series. Dodger fans were worried that they weren't going to win another game. And it's not like they didn't make it interesting last night. Closer Kenley Jansen enters in the eighth. He's got a 5-3 lead. He gets the final out. Then he comes back in the ninth. He strikes out the first batter he faces. Then he allows a single, a stolen base, a single, another single, and suddenly the bases were loaded with only one out. A 12th straight loss was staring them right in the eyes. And the way things had been going, that was going to happen, right? Was there any way that couldn't happen? Something fluky would happen, like a ground ball getting kicked and three runs scoring. Or more likely, Buster Posey just goes deep for a game-winning walk-off grand slam. Think those battery chuckers by the bay would have liked that very much? But no. Jansen digs deep. He strikes out Posey. He strikes out Nick Hundley. Ball game over. Streak over. Thanks for coming.
Jansen on 0-2. Hundley swung on and missed strike three. The losing streak is over. The magic number is down to 8. The Dodger lead over the Nationals 4.5 as the Dodgers beat the Giants tonight 5-3. First win since the first day of September, and the Dodgers are breathing an enormous sigh of relief as they leave the first base dugout to greet the starters coming off the field. And the Dodgers now inch closer to their 5th consecutive National League Western Division title.
Dodgers win. Dodgers win. Thanks to Dodgers Radio Network. Hey, let's be real about this. If they had found a way to lose that game, to blow a 2-run lead in the ninth with Jansen on the mound and after a Clayton Kershaw start, they may not have won another game. That would have been a tomahawk through their chest. But somehow they hold it together and they get it done. Kershaw said after the game, quote, "Nothing about these past 2 weeks have been easy, so we shouldn't have expected this one to be easy," end quote. Truth. And here is another truth. They had to have that. Had to have that. Not because they needed to end the streak, but because it would have been brutal to waste another Kershaw start without snapping that streak. And again, it looked like that might happen. Early, in fact, in the third, when they fell behind after Kershaw gave up a bomb to Giant shortstop Kelby Tomlinson. Not exactly a home run threat. That was his first bomb in nearly 2 years. And that's kind of how things have been going for the Dodgers over this streak. Anything that could go wrong did go wrong. But they showed some grit. They came back in the fourth thanks to a Chase Utley homer, a Kershaw double, helping himself out, a sac fly and a 2-run double from Yasiel Puig. Again, that's what they needed last night. Everybody doing everything they could. And most of all, weirdest of all, was that that game not only snapped that streak, but it clinched a playoff spot in the process. How weird? Dave Roberts didn't even know it until a reporter told him, quote, "We're in the postseason? Really? That's great." Yeah, I would imagine that's probably the farthest thing from his mind. They just had to find a way to win one game. Just win one game. So no shock. They didn't break out the beer goggles. There was no champagne party in the clubhouse. There was no booze, only relief. And again, not overreaching the postseason, but for even winning a game. You imagine if they had choked that game away in the ninth, how bad that would have been? I don't think you come back from that. I don't think they get back up off the mat if they had choked that game away. Thankfully, they didn't. Amir Abdullah is my guest. Amir, nice to have you back on the show. How are you?
It's always good to be on. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you back. All right, so Sunday's game got off to kind of a weird start in the sense that the defense forced a turnover. You guys get the ball. You run for 5 yards on the first play. Then Matthew Stafford throws a pick six. Not exactly the way you draw things up to start the season, but you didn't fall apart. How were you guys able to bounce back from that start?
Well, it was tough for me to bounce back because on that play, I got stiffed one like crazy to the ground. And then the dude scored, so it was hard for me to bounce back emotionally. But Matt is all right. He's the guy who's been there time and time again throughout his career with the Detroit Lions. Just all the time you see him come back victory. So we knew as long as Nine was mentally there, we had a chance. So, he stayed with us, and we just followed his lead.
You see, Amir, I think that fans, if they don't pay attention, they don't understand this notion that it's easy to say, well, it's the Lions doing things that the Lions do, but that's not the case at all. This team set an NFL record last season by winning 8 games after trailing in the fourth quarter, and then you open up this season with another comeback win over the Cards. So what's it say about the mental toughness of this team that you keep finding different ways to bounce back over and over again?
It's just a testament to how we practice and how we prepare, really. You know, Coach Caldwell and the staff, they always put us in adverse situations where we have to overcome and definitely rely on each other more than anything. And we're definitely battle-tested in that area. You know, you see it showing up in the game. So we're going to continue to do things with the process in which we do them and expect the same results.
Amir Abdullah joining us. So Matthew Stafford throws for nearly 300 yards, 4 touchdowns in the win. His new contract received a lot of attention. What did you make of the way he played and then all the attention that's being paid to that contract?
Man, I mean, I feel like no one else deserves it besides him. You know, if anyone deserves it, it's him. You know, he's the guy who's, he's not a guy who's always in the media. He's not a guy who's always on every marketing deal. He's a guy who just comes to work and shows up and he's going to bring his best effort every day. And I feel like that's really the attitude of this team because of that, you know, and he leads that. And to see him get his due, especially for, you know, how much time he sacrificed in this city with his family and everything, I feel like he definitely deserves it, and I'm happy for him.
Lions running back Amir Abdullah joining us. Now, you're coming off an injury. I'm not going to ask you to get into it because you've talked about the fact that you don't think about it because, as you've said, quote, "I feel like you breed what you think and you become what you speak." In fact, I got to stop you right there. That's a really deep thing to say. I feel like you breed what you think and you become what you speak. What's that mean to you? What do you think about that?
Well, personally for me, it's been a trend in my whole life. I feel like everything that I've been given or, you know, blessed with it, up to this point, I've spoken to existence, you know. And I always tell the story, but when I was 6 years old, I told my mom and dad that I was going to be drafted in the NFL. And even though it was just a silly dream for me when I was six, I kind of continued that same dream, just speaking into existence to my friends, my family members, and later my teammates throughout life, and, you know, here I am. But I feel like even on a more personal level for everyone, more universal level, rather, speaking things to existence is powerful. I definitely believe that if you begin to speak it, you begin to think about it more, which, sparks you to work more towards it and to just do more things that will help you get to that point wherever you want to be. So that's a big quote that I like to use.
All right, so in terms of the rehab itself, you had never suffered a significant injury before. What were the types of things that you were thinking and speaking as you approached that? In fact, what was your approach to that rehab?
That I had to come back even better. You know, I knew being having surgery and, you know, taking a step back was going to slow me down a little bit, but I always knew at some point once I rehabbed to the point that I needed to, I have to be better from it in some way. And then I think I'm still working on that. You know, it's not a finished product. Of course, I'm out there playing, no restrictions now, but I'm still, you know, still getting better mentally, still getting better physically, and I feel like still getting better as a football player. So there's a lot more that I can bring that I'm continuing to work for every single day.
You know, obviously, it's part of your job. You're going to get hurt. Everybody gets hurt. Nobody doesn't get hurt. But you had never missed a game. I mean, I got to stress this. You had never missed a game in your life prior to last season. So what was it like being away from the game for the very first time and dealing with that?
It was tough. It was tough. It was a lot of things that I was thinking at the time I never thought before, which were a lot of things that were desperate thoughts, a lot of things that were irrational thoughts, you know, and I'd never been that player before, so it definitely opened me up to a different spectrum of football that I'd never been introduced to before. But I'm glad that it did now because I know how it feels to be kind of left on the outside looking in and helpless, you know, can't even get in the door because physical limitations. So, you know, to be, in my opinion, which is one of the lowest parts you can, places you can feel as an athlete playing this game, to be there before and now to be back on the other side of that window, it allows me to work with more purpose. So I'm appreciative of that, even though it was a dark time for me.
Clones, while I've got your attention, I've got to talk to you about Stamps.com. Stamps.com saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I can mail any letter, any package using just my computer and printer, and the mailman picks it right up. I can avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. And you can create your Stamps account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. Unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes. You can print postage for letters or packages at your own convenience 24/7. It's convenient, it's easy, it's reliable, it's flexible. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. I use Stamps.com because I can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, and any class of mail I have using my own computer and printer. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the very top of the homepage, type in Rome. Stamps.com, enter Rome. Stamps.com, never go to the post office ever again. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our daily jungle. Amir, I know you breed what you think. You probably don't want to go too deep into it, but when you say things like, I had some desperate thoughts, like what types of things might you have been thinking of?
Just doing whatever I can to, you know, get back on the field. Some things that may not have been in my best interest in terms of health long term, you know.
Not like illegal things, illicit things?
No, just trying to come back early and, you know, be there for my team, because it's disappointing when your team is on a run like they were during the season and you're just watching from the TV or watching from the sideline. You're like, man, I want to help with this, you know, this push that they were making. I think they won like 8 in a row or something last year at one point, and I was just sitting there like, man, if I could just be there, maybe this 8 could turn to 10 or 12, you know. So, you know, desperately working and not always taking into consideration that, you know, I need to rest and I need to get better.
I got you. I see you working now. I mean, guys do that. They come back too soon because they want to be out there so badly, and then that puts them back even further. So now you've got a game under your belt, and when you look at the weapons you have on offense, starting with you and Theo Riddick, plus the receivers and Matthew Stafford under center, how good can this unit be offensively?
I mean, it can be as good as however we show up. You know, one thing I know we have to be better in is showing up early and getting things started early. We can't be a team that can always expect our defense to play that good. You know, our defense played outstanding, lights out. In my opinion, one of the best defensive performances I've seen since I've been here with this organization. But we can't, you know, I hope they play like that all the time, but we can't expect that standard all the time. So we have to make sure we're on our P's and Q's, that we're not turning the ball over early or we're not stalling out on drives early. We got to make our stuff work. And, yeah, we can have all the weapons we want, but we definitely have to show up when it's time to show up.
All right, so now, speaking of Theo Riddick, I saw you recently breaking down the fashion of the guys in the running back room. Who was the best dressed of that group, and maybe who needs a little bit of help?
Best dressed in terms of just everyday wear, everyday fit, like just waking up in the morning getting dressed?
Sure.
I would say me, because I have an interesting – I'm very culturally diverse. I've been to a lot of places and I've picked up a lot of things from a lot of different cities, and they all come into one when it comes to me, like putting together my fashion sometimes. You know, some days are better than others, but for the most part, if I'm bringing it, you're going to get a good showing from me. Theo is the name brand guy. He buys a lot of like Christian Louis Vuitton and Balenciaga, so of course you're going to look good if you're wearing that stuff. Like, it's the highest, you know, price thing you can buy, the finest things you can buy. Zach Zinner doesn't care too much about it. We can move on from him pretty fast. Dwayne tries, but Dwayne is awkwardly built. So, like, he's tall, but he's also kind of, like, fat, too, a little bit. But he's also ripped, so it's kind of weird. You know, he has a little belly, but he also has huge arms. So clothes, he has a tough time, like, finding stuff that fits him well. Teon is the guy who probably needs some help. He's a Florida guy. He's a country as they come. And, you know, those dudes, they don't know too much about color coordination and things that go and don't go. You know, he's the guy who would wear, like, corduroy pants with, like, a windbreaker top. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
something
yeah.
like that. It's like they could both be nice pieces, but they just don't go in that circumstance. You know what I mean?
Dude, a windbreaker over corduroys? I mean, like, is he doing that just to troll people, or
now,
is he really not
Well, I mean, that's not something he's literally worn, but I'm just giving you a
not yet.
Of something.
Amir, not yet, right? Not yet,
hasn't. Yeah, not yet, exactly. The season's young.
Now, there may not be a better job in all of sports than playing quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. And Tony Romo had that gig for, what, 13, 14 years? But he may have an even better gig now than he did then. He's part of CBS's top NFL broadcast team along with Jim Nance. Again, being under center with that star on the side of your helmet is about as good as it gets. I'd argue the best job in all of sports. But it's not forever. It's not for forever. And in reality, with Tony Romo hurt and Dak Prescott stepping in and killing it the way he did, in fact, it not only was not forever, but it was probably over. In fact, it was. So if you're Tony Romo, and, you know, you've got this ambition, and you're healthy, and you want to end your career on your terms, what do? Do you stay in Dallas and back up, or do you take a shot someplace else and try and chase that ring and maybe jam the Cowboys for not giving you an opportunity to win your job back? And he could have gone someplace else. There's no doubt Tony Romo had other opportunities waiting for him on the field. But I would argue, and I did then, and I would now, while he had other opportunities waiting for him on the field, none better than the one he had off of it with CBS. And again, this isn't me just shilling for the company. You know, if you listen to me or have for any period of time, you know that's not what I do. I'm not shilling for the company that scratches my checks. Because it could be CBS, or it could be Fox, or it could be NBC as it relates to somebody like Tony Romo. Think of the guys who have those gigs. The analyst gigs, the top analyst gigs. They're few and far between. Those jobs are almost impossible to get because the guys who get them generally are very good at them and will do anything they can to keep them as long as they can because they're amazing jobs. Think about it. Troy Aikman, Chris Collinsworth, John Madden back in the day. These guys are all very good at what they do. And frankly, they're set forever. Some of these guys get gigs like that and they do even better off the field than they did on the field. And they are set for a long time. And seemingly after only one game, I'd say the same thing about Romo. I mean, it was only one game. But the guy was pretty amazing in what he did in that first game. In fact, downright omniscient. Look, if you play 14 years in the NFL, especially at quarterback, you probably will know what to look for once you're done playing. You probably will know what to expect before it happens. But not on seemingly every single play like Romo did.
Jim, I got $5. This is a run to the left.
I got to pay now as it's Henry. Stepping out. Not a good block by Josh Klein. What did you see there?
I've seen football in the NFL for 14 years.
Hey, kill, kill! Kill, kill!
Kill, kill!
Kill, kill!
Here comes a run to the left.
What's up?
It is a run to the left, and it's off left guard. It's Lynch taking the pile with him. What do you see here, Tony?
Well, I thought they were going to run the ball to the right. Now he's going back left with the run.
Here you go. To the left it is. Richard.
Take a look right here, Jim. If he comes downhill, they're going to throw this fade down at the bottom. If not, see if he does it.
It's Cyprian stepping up. In the pass, you had it, Tony, and it was off the hands of Coop. That's what Carr read, just like you did.
Yep.
I mean, and that's only part of it. He did that the entire game. Again, I expect a guy like that to know football. I mean, Noah Cold. I expect him to see plays as they develop or even before the ball is snapped. But I'm not sure I've ever heard. In fact, I know I haven't. I've never heard an analyst do that as many times in a game as he just did, especially in his first ever game. I mean, hell, I watched Rex Ryan's first game with ESPN. And Ryan's another guy who's seen a lot of football. Hell, he walks around like he's Vince Lombardi himself. I'm not sure he predicted even one play correctly in that game. So a lot of folks were asking how CBS could take a guy, even as bright or as talented as Romo, and then throw him in that chair without any broadcast experience, without any experience at all, and now no one's asking. Not after that game. I mean, that was pretty mesmerizing to see him call that many plays before they happened. $5, I'd be like, yeah, I got 10 grand that they're going to run left. Over the past several weeks, there has been something that I've heard time and time again, claims from a particular fan base that their team is not getting enough respect from the rest of the country. No names mentioned, Indians fans. All right, Cleveland, this is for you.
Cleveland! This is for you!
The Windians did it again. They beat the Tigers 2-0 last night to run their win streak to 20. Let me repeat that. 20 wins in a row. Flat out ridiculous. And not only are they winning, they are steamrolling teams. They've outscored teams by 102 runs in 20 games. Most teams would be happy to score 5 runs per game. That's their average margin of victory. Afterwards, Detroit Tigers manager Brad Ausmus said, quote, "They've got it all." But that's the thing. They don't have it all. Or they don't have their all. They're doing it without Andrew Miller, the nastiest bullpen weapon in the postseason last year, and without Jason Kipnis or Michael Brantley. I thought it was crazy when I said the Dodgers might be the best baseball team I've ever seen, but now the Indians might be just that. Commodores head coach Derek Mason is my guest. Derek, good morning. Great to have you on. How are you?
Jim Rome, what's happening? I'm doing well.
Good, coach. Good to have you. All right, so you're coming off that win over Alabama A&M. Your quarterback, Kyle Schirmer, 15 of 18, 202 yards, 4 touchdowns, and he ran for another one. Let me start there. How pleased were you with what you saw from your quarterback on Saturday?
You know, Kyle's been amazing. He's done a good job of just, mastering the offense, managing possessions, making sure, man, he can get us in the right play. And I think, as a third-year quarterback, man, we're just starting to see, exactly what he's capable of. He's done a great job of distributing the football. And he's been, pinpoint accurate in terms of ball placement. So that's what any head coach wants to see from his quarterback.
Then on top of that, I know that he's worked hard on just the fundamentals, the things you don't talk about, the things that aren't so sexy, things like footwork and mechanics. How much of a difference has that made in his game?
Well, for him, as I've seen him, mature, you can tell. I mean, he's patient, he's poised. The footwork, has allowed him to extend plays, and that's important in college football, especially in the SEC. Where you have great pass rushers, you have to make sure, that you can get yourself out of traffic. So for him, his ability to keep his eyes down the field, play with poise in the pocket, the footwork again, man, has kept plays alive. But it's also made him a more accurate quarterback. Again, when you got to flip your hips, when you got to find and go from your first to your second to your third read, that takes footwork, it takes patience, and it takes discipline. And he's been able to do all those things so far this season.
Vanderbilt head coach Derek Mason joining us. So you're off to a 2-0 start for the first time since you arrived there. I know you're not going to spend a lot of time celebrating that fact, but how valuable is it to have that kind of momentum coming into what should be a very tough part of your schedule?
It's all about creating confidence. My first 3 seasons here saw us, really struggle during the early part of the season. And I believe college football is a junior-senior sport. So anytime you get a veteran group, man, you should start to see, some equity out of that. And, that's exactly what we've seen. We've seen confidence. Guys have played better from week one to week two, and we expect to play well versus Kansas State. Coach Snyder is one of the best coaches in the country. He's been doing it a long time. He's been making men for a long time. But when you look at the way they play ball, they never beat themselves. Offense, defense, and special teams is always their calling card. They're going to be physical, and we have to match the physicality and come to play on Saturday.
And Kansas State has scored 55 in both of their games. And as you point out, he's done this a long time. He knows what he's doing. You know what you're up against. You know, back to your other point, though, that it's a junior and senior game. One of the things I've heard you talk about is the fact that in the past, maybe you had to push your teams through practice, but you don't need to do that this season. What is different about this group?
Well, Jim, the platform this group stands on is a foundation over the last 3 years that's been built. It's been about, the relentless, tough, and intelligent mantra. I mean, we got to come to work every day. We bring a hard hat, a lunch pail, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, some coffee, and we get at it. And I don't have to push this group. This group understands, and that was set during the off season. They understand what the expectation is. You earn in this game, man, what you work for. And I truly believe that this group has worked as hard as any group I've ever had. And right now what we're starting to see is that investment piece starting to pay dividends. You put money in the bank, you can start making some withdrawals. And right now we just got to keep putting money in the bank.
I wonder. I mean, it's one thing. It's a good thing. It's a great thing if you've got a group that comes to work and they've got that hard hat and they've got that lunch pail and they've got that peanut butter and jelly sandwich and they've got their Joe. But, Derek, I love the analogy. What happens? We've all been there. You know how it sucks if you forget your lunch or if you don't get that cup of Joe? What does this group do if that happens? Do they respond the right way?
Well, this group's going to respond the right way. You know what? Kansas State's going to hit us right in the mouth. And the thing is, we're going to swing right back. That's how this team has been built. You know, Kansas State prides themselves on playing, you know, physical, fast football. They don't beat themselves. But you know what? This group has grown up. We've made enough mistakes in the past, you know, to really hurt ourselves and shoot ourselves in the foot. And in order for this program to step forward, we have to make sure, man, that we get out of our own way. Okay, we have to stay where our feet are and make sure that we play consistent, hard 60 minutes of relentless, tough, and intelligent football.
You know, the fact that I'm even going to ask you this would suggest to you, Derek, that I'm not listening to what you're saying, and that's not true. I need to know exactly where my feet are, too. But you've got Kansas State, and then you've got Alabama, and then you've got Florida, and then you've got Georgia. It's very clear to me that you're not going to let them look ahead, but they are young guys. It might be natural. How do you make sure that they know exactly where their feet are and that they aren't looking ahead? Because that is a murderer's row awaiting you beyond Kansas State.
Well, it goes back to the old analogy, you know, of how do you eat an elephant? You know, and that's one bite at a time for us, man. We just got to make sure that we win days. If you can win days, okay, man, that 1 or 2 or 3 days can build out your week, and that gets you to Saturday. We work extremely hard on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to earn the opportunity to play on Saturdays. And believe me, you train 9 months to only play 3 months of football. So if that's the case, we need to cherish every opportunity, and the one that we have this week is Kansas State.
You know, I think it says a lot about him, too, that he's a coach's coach, that he'd have you in and you guys could have that kind of experience. Before I let you go, Jay Cutler is going to make his debut with Miami. Everybody wants to see that. He's Vandy's favorite guy. Hey, Derek, what's he like? Does he come around very much? And if so, what's he like with the program?
I mean, Jay's a beast. I love him. You know, Jay Cutler is one of those guys, man, you want to be in a foxhole with. You know, in terms of football, his football IQ is tremendous. I mean, he loves the game. He's a guy, man, that's really to himself. You know, man, when you look at it, you know, he likes the locker room. He likes being around the guys. Obviously, here at Vanderbilt, you know, he helped build, you know, in this place just in terms of what he did here and his exploits, but he's also given back. He's come back to this place. He's been around Kyle. He's been around our guys. I mean, he's brought his guys during the offseason here, you know, in the Vanderbilt. So our relationship is extremely strong, and it's only getting better.
So, Derek, I mean, you're emphatic. I mean, I can tell you love this guy. You respect this guy. So is he just misunderstood and people just not know him?
I truly believe that. Listen, I saw a guy by the name of, you know, man, Brett Favre come to Minnesota, and, you know, man, most people probably thought, hey, you know, man, he was done after he left Green Bay. But he came and he took us to a place that no other quarterback had been able to take us. Okay, I mean, he got us to the NFC Championship game, one game away from the Super Bowl. I mean, I feel like Jay's got that energy in his tank. And believe me, he's with a coordinator, head coach now, man, that he knows, that knows him. Okay, I mean, has been able to, you know, man, really get him invested in football, and he likes the team that he's on. So when it's all said and done, this dude's getting ready to go out and have a monster year. I'm excited for Jay and his family, and, you know, man, he's always anchoring down. So wherever you're at, Jay, let's anchor down.
Emails.
Dear Jim, you know what Indian shortstop couldn't hit 30 home runs? Omar Vizquel. He was too busy chasing all the tramps around the American League. Regards, Albert Bell. Hold on, Albie. First of all, that was sent in by Randall WFI in the OC. Yeah. Albert Bell. Yeah, I got a couple of really distinct memories of Albert Bell. Number one, when I worked for ESPN way back in the day, they sent me back to Cleveland to interview Albert Bell. And I remember we were on the plane going back there, and the entire crew was like, I mean, what are we going to do if this guy doesn't show up? Because Albert Bell, I could see stiffing somebody like me. Remember is when the whole cork bat incident went down? And I kept thinking, what do we do? What do we do? You can't get on a plane and go all the way back there and not get the interview. What do? We got to find a way to make this thing work. But he did show up. He did show up. And I want to say that in my entire career of interviewing athletes, at that time especially, I'm going to put Albert Bell in the top five most intimidating guys ever. Right there with Mike Tyson, who's still number one. Oh, and if you want to listen to the podcast, I reset Mike Tyson saying to me on my Showtime program that one day he was going to kill me. That he was going to look for me in Miami and kill me. But that was a different time, and Mike doesn't feel that way anymore. Albert was pretty scary. Albert was pretty intimidating. So Omar Vizquel, and you might remember, Omar Vizquel was one of the slickest fielding shortstops I've ever seen in my life. I mean, defensively, he was an absolute freaking wizard, what this guy could do. And then he came out with a book, and I thought that was a little unusual. Like, Omar Vizquel had a book? But then again, knowing the literary industry the way I do, and I thought Vizquel was a great player. Pretty much anybody can get a book. You know how the book industry works? And I'm not going to profess to know a ton about this. It's kind of like a lot of other things. Lots of people get opportunities, and they don't have to all hit. But the one big one that does carries all the other ones that don't, and that's the bet. It's kind of like horse racing. We always talk about that. It's so speculative, and it's so high risk that there's going to be a lot that just don't pan out. But if you get that one or two big horses, they pay for all the other ones that don't work. So it's not that hard to get a book. Anyway, Omar had a book and had some things to say in that book about Albert Bell. And if I'm not mistaken, Albert just called this show one day and took exception to what Vizquel had written. I mean, we didn't book Albert. Albert was listening to the show and called up in 2002. I can't believe it's been that long. Just listening to this show, driving around one day, listening to this show to say, hey, listen, I got something to say about that book.
The problem, of course, was that all of Albert's bats were corked. That was the exact quote. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, how does he know my bats were corked? Because, you know, if he wouldn't spend so much time out chasing all the tramps around American League, then he would know about my bat situation. And since when did Omar become good enough to write an autobiography? He hadn't done anything.
I mean, you want to talk about surreal. That was Albert Bell just calling this show. I was talking about that, going on about Omar said this, Omar wrote that. And we've always been a pretty big deal in Cleveland. Albert was listening and said, oh, really? How would he know? How would he know my bats were corked, quote, when he was running around chasing all the tramps in the American League? And there was more where that came from.
Well, what else did he write about in the book?
Yeah, that's the only thing so far.
You know what? I'm sure he didn't write about all his escapades on the road and all his escapades in Cleveland where him, his wife, and his kid lives. Did he talk about that?
I mean, damn. You want to talk about fire. You imagine if something like that happened right now, how viral that would be, how quickly that would be. I mean, that honestly was pre-Twitter, obviously. Albert Bell said, what else did he write about? And I think at that point, the book may not have been out and there were just some excerpts, maybe. I don't know. What a surreal moment that was. I forgot about that. There's always amazing moments in the history of the show where an athlete is listening to something we're talking about and calling to weigh in and set the record straight or take exception. But Albert Bell didn't spend a lot of time talking to the media back in the day. He was very comfortable on the show that day, calling the call-in line. Jim Mora. So let me just kind of lay this out, and I'll see if I can get into it. If you go to New Orleans, people are always telling you, experience Bourbon Street. Get a picture by Jackson Square. Catch a Mardi Gras parade. I'll never forget it. My whole life, I always wanted to go to New Orleans. Always wanted to go to New Orleans. And then when I finally did go for the Super Bowl years and years and years ago, it was one of the rare things that lived up to the hype. Like, I love New Orleans. Now, if you're a sports fan, especially a football fan, you're well aware of one Jim Mora Sr. Legend. Legendary coach. Legendary personality. And if you can believe this, he's now 82. Jim Mora Sr. is 82. Could easily pass for 60. And he's got the energy of a guy 20 years younger than that. And he was on TV doing what he does. And there was an interview with him on a panel earlier this week, and my man got nice.
Fletcher, Sharif, and Coach Jim Mora, the later it gets, the less patient Coach gets with Fletcher and Sharif, guys.
Scott just said the later it gets, Jim, the less patient you get with us. Is that true?
Who said that?
Scott.
Tell Scott he's full of shit. It's okay. Sorry about that.
Two words. Uh-oh. That's incredible. He just laughed. He said, who said that? Oh, Scott. Yeah, tell him he's full of bleep. Said it live on live TV. And I love how the lead anchor also reaches over. You guys see the video. He reaches over to cover Mora's mic as if he's faster than the speed of sound and somehow caught the words before they were spit directly into that mic. Nice try.
Tell Scott he's full of s***.
You know what's even better? That when the big man found out, he couldn't care less. He couldn't care less, which made it even more awesome. Like, if you don't know by now, you never will. Going legend on the mic is what Jim Mora Sr. does. It's his calling card. I mean, aside from being like the most competitive guy you'll ever meet, it's his calling card. It's his brand. You can call him a head coaching legend. I say he's a straight-up legend. I mean, psst, please. As great as that was,
please.
There was no way my man would put up that four-letter S-bomb on the top shelf next to even his best. That doesn't go up there. Not best or not next to his iconic coulda, woulda, shoulda rant back in 87.
Could've, would've, should've is the difference of what I'm talking about. The good teams don't come in and say could've. They get it done. All right? It's that simple. I'm tired of saying could've, should've, would've. That's why we ain't good enough yet. Because we're saying could've and they ain't.
Man, I miss this guy so much. That was 30 years ago. Yeah, and about 150 years ahead of its time. Right next to the trophy case where the playoff rant sits proudly.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
Oh, man, was so good. So far ahead of his time. I mean, there's never even been anybody since him that was like that. And that might not, he gets a lot of run for the playoff rant. That might not even be his best rant.
We couldn't do diddly poo offensively. We couldn't make a first down. We couldn't run the ball. We didn't try to run the ball. We couldn't complete a pass. We sucked.
This guy's fire. I can't even finish the thought, but I just want to say this. If you look at the video, he's now 82, could pass for 60, and has the energy of a guy 20 years younger than that. I've spoken to Jim Mora Sr. before, but only once in person. It was at a Christmas party about 20 years ago. One of our network Christmas parties, Craig Kitchen, my manager, ran the company. He had a Christmas party. Jim Mora Sr. was at that party. I had a conversation with him. I was literally mesmerized. I could not stop talking to him. I'd never been in the presence of somebody like that who had this like crazy it. And at that time, I'm going to say he was 60. I said, Coach, what do you do? What do you do when you have that kind of fire and that kind of competitive drive? And now you're retired for the most part. You do some games. What do you do? Where do you find that level of competition now? I said, what are you talking about? He goes, I compete every day still. Every day from the time I get up at everything I do. In exercise, in golf, in breaking down opponents, whether I'm coaching or not. I compete all day long still. And again, same deal. I want to go run through a wall or over a wall or put on some pads, even though I've never played football on any level. I mean, you can just see it. And now at 82, this guy still has it. It. Jim Mora Sr. Freaking legend. It's him and everybody else. My man's in the New Orleans Saints Hall of Fame, but it's a crime to me that he's not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the Broadcasting Hall of Fame, the Life Hall of Fame. Check out the suit he's rocking in that thing. It's electric. He's got 82. My man looks like he's 50. He looks like he's 45. Let's go to East Lansing very quickly before I wrap this hour. Joe in East Lansing. It's good to have you, Joe. What's up? How are you?
Yo, Jimmy. Jimmy, thank you for showing some love to the Lions. I want to accomplish three things with this talk. First, I'm going to throw major shade at the Giants. Hey, we're coming for y'all on Monday. Eli, my boy A'shaun, my boy Ziggy, it's over. Three sacks. I'm calling it. And guess what? We're going to the playoffs again, 2 years in a row. I don't know what we're going to do when we get there. You know Aaron Rodgers. He might, you know, he might do that Hail Mary stuff.
That's not a good call.
No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Gratuitous profanity on my podcast. I think it goes without saying, I certainly cannot have it on this show.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah! Look at Alvin. Thanks, Joe, in East Lansing. You can't go with a four-letter bomb like that. Even if you try to apologize for it right after you do it. And I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. I think that slipped out. You were fired up. You were fired up, and you did just hear me go with two F-bombs. But again, I was reading a quote. This is why it's okay for me to do it. It wasn't me just doing it to do it. I was reading a quote. And I did so on a podcast, and notice I beeped it out here. If you want the unedited version, go to the podcast. Thank you very much for checking in and checking out the Daily Jungle. If you haven't done so yet, go download episode 3 of the Jim Rome podcast. Boxing legend Oscar De La Hoya right before Canelo v. Triple G. Plus Heisman Trophy winner Lamar Jackson before the Cardinals' huge matchup with Clemson this weekend. Another great episode of completely original content.
Thank you for listening. See you next time. I'm out.
And you know, well, and you know, well, and you know, well, and you know, well,